Hi, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.FM here. 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests. So a recent book, what was the name of that book? A recent story comes out that somebody writes a book, here it is, about sin. So the Sister of Mercy, a Sister of Mercy wrote about the Kama Sutra, sexual desire, our yearnings for pleasure, and she puts out this book called Just Love, a Framework for Christian Sexual Ethics. And this book is published and then gets denounced by the Catholic Church, which immediately catapults it to the bestseller list. This is the new way to publish. If you could get denounced, or if you could get banned by any group of people, you're probably going to hit the bestseller list. You know, it's not a bad thing to do. Not a bad way to go about it. But it got me thinking. It got me thinking about sin itself. Having been brought up as a someone who was trained in religion, and later thought twice about it, three times about it. So I wondered about religion about sin for so many different people and how it ties in. And I'm not sure about sin. With me, Lisa Arnone, who helped me do the research on this today. And Lisa, I'm not sure about sin. You know, does it come from, it's a concept.
And it needs to be defined, but how do we define it? What is sin?
Is sin something that is a sense of morality or ethic that I have inside me or my mother told me? Or is it something that I read in a book from, you know, some book that said to me, this is what is good and what is bad? And who determines it? And then what are sins and which ones are sins and which are not? And which ones will get you, you know, into heaven and which, where is no heaven? So we went through it, and I found it fascinating, and I think you're going to find it interesting, because mostly we see things through our own eyes, and we have very limited knowledge about other people's cultures and ideas. And the first we want to look at is this very idea of sinning. Sinning, you know, common ideas surrounding sin. In different religions, they have this common idea that God will punish you now or in the afterlife for things that you do that you shouldn't do. That's one concept. Get that? You may not get punished now, but you'll get punished in your afterlife or later. Okay. The second is, it's a question whether a sin is something that's willful or not willful. What if you do something by accident? What if you turn on a friend and you don't mean to? What if the way you appear gets something happening that was passive on your part? What if you passively do something that wasn't intentional, but it was defined by most as sinful, but it wasn't intentional? The other is that an idea that one's conscience should produce guilt for a conscious act of sin. So therefore, if you feel like doing something bad, that you should have an automatic inside that says to you, don't do it, or what Freud called a superego, that says to you, no, you know, you got two parts of you now. You're either going to do it or don't do it. Either eat that candy or don't eat that candy, because sometimes people consider, you know, even certain foods, for example, to be sinful, like bacon, you know, can be sinful. Meat on Fridays used to be sinful. And then there's the next thing, and I think this is interesting, friends, so as you stay with me, this is going to get fascinating as we get along. So it's not boring stuff. It relates to you definitely, because you, if you listen to WBAI, are a sinner, just by definition. Repent. I'm going to get letters about that one. Okay, so there's some scheme for determining the seriousness of the sin. The sin I just committed by talking about WBAI people, right? That could be very serious or not very serious. If I said it in a joking way, it's serious or not so serious. Now, the other concept about sinning in general is this concept of repentance, which says that at some point you could express regret for what you did, and that you could atone for it in some way, and that there's a possibility of forgiveness for your sin. So here's the sequence. Not the sequence, but the components of sinning. Punishment for sins, usually from God or in the life after. A question about whether it's intentional or not intentional. That you have this automatic thing that tells you when something is bad. That tells you if it's your conscience. There's a way for determining the seriousness of a sin, that there's, you even if you commit a sin, there's a way out of it. Now, that's one way of looking at it. Let's look at how the Buddhists look at sin, and this is fascinating. Buddhism does not recognize the idea behind sin because there's this cause-effect theory in Buddhism, which is called karma. You know, in general, Buddhism illustrates intentions as a cause of karma, either good, bad, or neutral. If you do good things, you get good karma, and later you do better. If you do mediocre things, you stay the same, but if you do bad things, it affects you in the future. Vipaka, V-I-P-A-K-A, is the result of your karma may create low-quality living, hardships, destruction, and all means of disharmony in life. It's the effect of what you do. Or it could create healthy living, easiness, and harmony in life. So good things lead to good things, and bad things lead to bad things. What goes around comes around. So the very fundamental code of Buddhist ethics lay in the following, okay? And this is, I think it's just fascinating to know it. Well, go ahead, Lisa. What are these basic?
Well, this would be the Noble Eightfold Path, preceded by the Pancasila, okay? I undertake the rule to refrain from destroying living creatures. I undertake the rule to refrain from taking that which is not given.
So if we were to take, I undertake the rule, and we have thou shalt not, right? That would kind of go along with it. But we're basically saying, don't destroy any living creature. Creature, we're not saying plants. That's a Buddhist belief. You don't squash a bug. Don't flat a squy. Don't take anything that's not given to you. Got that? It has to be given to you. You can't just pick it up. It has to be given to you. Next.
I undertake the rule to refrain from sexual misconduct.
Which is defined as what?
Well, it's not defined here, but we've defined it other places.
Right, but here, according to the Buddhist, sexual misconduct probably is anything that you know is wrong, but it doesn't really spell it out necessarily. I'm sure it does somewhere.
I undertake the rule to refrain from incorrect speech.
Now, that's a beautiful thing in Buddhists. If you watch the speech of people who are Buddhists, they're very careful about the way they speak because what you speak has consequences. So the speech is not just something that you can just kind of load words every now and then that might be harmful or stuff like that.
I undertake the rule to refrain from intoxicants, which lead to carelessness.
Intoxicants, you can't smoke grass, you can't, I mean, I don't undertake the rule. It's not that I refuse to drink. Give me a sip of sake and I may be okay with it. But if it makes me careless, I as a Buddhist choose not to do it. So the goal of Buddhism is to have the right view, the right intention, the right speech, the right action, the right work, the right effect, the right mindfulness, and the right consciousness. This rightness is the idea. And therefore, it leads to the cessation of suffering. It makes you free of the cycle of death, and it leads you to nirvana. In other words, be a good boy.
Do no harm.
Do no harm. Don't eat bugs. Right? Be careful. Other than that, I mean, everything else, actually, except for killing living creatures, which is... Everything else kind of makes sense. Killing living creatures makes sense, too, but that includes no fish.
Right, so you can't be a meat eater.
Now, let's take that and compare that to the Jewish view of sin, because this relates to all of you.
Judaism regards the violation of the divine commandments to be a sin. And those commandments, Judaism teaches that sin is an act and not a state of being. Humankind was not created with an inclination to do evil, but has that inclination. So people do have the ability to master this inclination and to choose good over evil.
Now wait, what religion is it that believes that you have an evil one lurking inside you? And that it's lurking in there at every minute. That's not one of these. I know it's one of the other religions. It's lurking inside you, and it's going to pop out at any moment. Judaism doesn't believe that, but Judaism believes, or according to Judaism, right, there is a part of you at any moment. There's a tendency to always sin.
You're inclined to, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so man is responsible for sin because he's endowed with the free will. Now, the generic Hebrew word for any kind of sin is avera, transgression. Judaism describes three levels of sin. There are three categories of a person who commits avera. The first one is someone who does an avera intentionally. This is the most serious category. The second one, who did an avera by accident, and then this person is responsible for their action, but it's considered less serious. And the third category is someone who was raised in an environment that was assimilated or non-Jewish and is not aware of the proper Jewish laws.
So they got three levels of sin. One is I did it intentionally and I knew it was wrong. And so I took that from his pocket and I didn't let him know about it. And I knew it all along, and that's serious stuff. The second one is... I did it kind of by accident. I saw it laying on the floor. I knew it must be his. So I picked it up. I put it away, and I didn't think about giving it back to him, so on and so forth. And the third one is, what do I know? I just turn on the lights, and I turn off the lights on Saturday. What difference does that make? They're not held accountable for that. But which of these? Now, according to the Jewish religion, now remember, this is us, two goyim. Two goys giving you what we were learning about today. But I love this learning about this because Judaism holds no human as being perfect. It says all humans have sinned many times. It gives you a day when you can kind of give up. There are certain unforgivable sins and certain ones not. But there's a basic belief here. 13 attributes of mercy. God is merciful because someone sins even though God knows that a person is capable of sin. God is merciful before a person sins. God is merciful to a sinner even after he has sinned. God represents the power to be merciful even in areas that a human would not expect or deserve. God is compassionate and eases the punishment of the guilty. God is gracious even to those who are not deserving. God is slow to anger, God is abundant in kindness, and God is a God of truth. Now, God guarantees kindness to future generations. He forgives invisible, intentional sins. He forgives a deliberate angering of him. He forgives sins that are committed in error, and he wipes away sins from those who repent. Now, if this is true, and we take the other side of religion and we say we all have inside of us some part of us that has a morality. This is more the atheist view. That I have my own moral codes. do I have the capacity to have a God, by as in Judaism, inside me to forgive me for the things that I do that I know I shouldn't do? So as you're listening today, how many of you could say that if looked at by somebody, let's say by the Jewish religion, what you do is sinful? And the things you do that are sinful, can you be forgiven for them? Well, according to Judaism, atonement is possible in many ways. There are days of atonement, there are offerings that are made, there are things you could do. Atonement is a real possibility. It happens, like, you know, on certain holidays. Can you atone for your sins? I think about 12-step programs. You know, in 12-step programs, one of the steps, the important steps, is for you to make atonement for sins that you have committed against people, things you've done to people that were wrong, and to in some way not only ask for forgiveness, but to atone for those sins. So let's say I knew a guy who has in a divorce lawsuit, and in the divorce lawsuit, his wife came out the bad end. She fought him in court, he fought back in court, his lawyers against his lawyers won more. And he was willing to give her 10 units of whatever it is, and she came in with her lawyers and they demanded 20 units of whatever it is, and she wound up getting 9. The court said you could only have 9 units. So it could be 900,000, 90,000, 9,000, 9 cents, whatever 9. But he originally was willing to give her 10. But because he got involved in the battle back and forth, he said, all right, she got 9, she gets 9. But later he said to himself, but you know, she was with me a long time and she deserves 10. And not until he was able to make up for that 10th did he feel good about himself. So what is it that you need to atone for to feel good about yourself? And do you need to carry it, or do you carry an unusual amount of guilt over something that wasn't a sin at all, or something you shouldn't have feel bad about? That's what we're kind of looking at today. And the way we're looking at it is we're looking at through religion, through this concept of religion. And Lisa and I have kind of gone through and fought out, and we said, let's take some of the major religions and look at them.
Okay. Next is Christianity, I think. Yes. So in Christianity, well, the Roman Catholic Church distinguishes between a personal sin, which is sometimes called actual sin, and original sin. And personal sins are then divided up further into...
Well, wait. I mean, let's make this clear. Original sin is the original sin. You know, the original sin is you violated it, you can't get over it.
You're born with it.
You're born with it, right? So yes. That's that. We'll take that one and put it aside. Now, if you're going to be a good person on this planet, you can either do mortal sins or venial sins, right? Is that how they break it up?
Yes, it's broken up into mortal and venial. And mortal sins are sins of grave matter, where the sinner is fully aware of their act or omission, and it is both a sin and a grave matter while they're performing the act. So it's deliberate.
Deliberate consent. A mortal sin. You know, mortal sin. I'm doing this, and I know I'm doing it, and I know it's wrong. Right?
Yes.
Mortal sin.
And then there are venial sins, which are sins that do not meet the conditions for mortal sins. So it's the act of committing a venial sin does not cut off the sinner from God's grace. And the sinner is not considered to have rejected God.
So what's a venial sin?
They say it injures the relationship between the sinner and God. So maybe
lying.
Lying would be a venial sin.
Right, but lying about whether the person should take a step backwards off the edge of a cliff.
That would be a mortal sin.
That's a mortal sin. Right. you know, the curious thing about mortal sins, I mean, the 7 deadly sins, are they mortal sins?
No, they are not mortal sins.
But they're not also venial sins.
No, they're not venial sins. They're in a category by themselves.
What they are is things that you feel in a way that you are rather than a thing you necessarily do. Pride, envy, lust, anger, greed, sloth, gluttony. Those are things that you, they're not necessarily things you do. It's almost a way you are. If you're prideful, are you committing sins by being prideful? Well, yes. Is it venial? No. Is it mortal? No. But if as a result of your being lustful, for example, you do things to people you shouldn't do, like our good friend Sodom. Yeah. Sodom. Hey, do you know the story of Sodom and Gomorrah? This is a good story. It's a good story. This is, I mean, you may think you know what that's about, Sodom and Gomorrah, but let me tell you. Two angels, this is a story, literally messengers, were invited by Lot, you know, and Lot knew his wife. You know, Lot, the wife who turned to salt, don't look back, Lot. So two angels are invited by Lot to take refuge with his family for the night. See, now there are some people, this is just comment off the side, who can invite angels to spend the night. And other people, you know, the angel might say, I don't know if I want to stay over there. Or number two, the person may not be an angel after all. They may just look like an angel, but they're still invited to spend the night. But in this case, Lot invited two real angels to spend the night. Now, the men of Sodom, who were out of hand, these kind of guys, they were just horny, crazy guys. This is the way it looks. You know, they were just like frothing at the mouth, hunting for do something sexual to just about anybody. The Bible doesn't really spell it out. No. But they God, I mean, looked at this town of Sodom and Gomorrah, and he said, those are evil towns down there, and I'm going to do something to clean it up. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. They were acting upon others in a sexual manner, men, women, children, animals, everything. No control, no remorse, nothing.
These are guys with, like, you know, they're walking around with penis in hand. I mean, is that the image that we're supposed to take from the Bible? That there was once a town called Sodom and Gomorrah where men were so uncontrollable that they were just having sex with everything in sight? Well, it's kind of the way it was portrayed.
Yes, in the story, it's definitely portrayed that way.
Hmm. Watch out for these guys. You know, you should see their disco night. All right, anyway. The men of Sodom surrounded Lot's house because they heard he had two angels hanging inside there, you know, and they demanded he bring the angels outside so they could do them. Lot said that the messengers were his guests, and he offers them his virgin daughters instead. You know, what else would you do? Hey, not the people who are staying in the guest room. They're angels. Take my daughters instead. But the Sodomites threatened to do worse with Lot than with his guests. They said, we'll do worse to you. And whereupon the angels come out of their room. They were staying in the guest room, I imagine. And they struck the Sodomites blind so that they wearied themselves to find the door. They couldn't find the door, and they went blind. What would ever happen to Lot's daughters? You think they ever went into therapy and said, you know, my father once offered me to... Okay. Anyway, that's the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. It goes on from there because the whole town got destroyed, and Lot leaves, and I know his wife, he tells his wife, don't turn back, right? And she turns into a pillar of salt.
Yes, she looked back.
So this is kind of the story that I grew up with. I grew up with this, and I grew up with a lot of fear in Catholicism, and I'm not saying that Catholicism is wrong, but I remember we used to have a crucifix. Did you grow up with a crucifix on the wall?
Over every doorway, yes.
INRI was a little banner that was right above the crucifix of Jesus Christ with his arms extended, the INRI. You know what we kids in Catholic school used to say? What it means? It means I'm nailed right in. Right. And we would, you know, we would, this is terrifying to us. Mm-hmm. It was like part of, this is what happens to you if you're a bad kid.
Yes, it's a fierce image, too.
It is fierce, isn't it?
Yes.
Huh. Okay, so anyway, but it's fierce. But, you know, as I said, this is not anti-Catholicism because it works. What is a sin is that it's certain violations of the human fundamental rights of human nature through genetic manipulation or experiments, doing sexual things. What are the sins? The sins are all kinds of things, sex, not drinking. It's incompetent individuals past the age of reason. If a person doesn't know something is contrary to the will of God, they cannot be held accountable for a sin until such time comes that the individual understands the particular sin is wrong, just like the Jews. You know, you don't know you did it. You didn't know it's bad. You can't blame you. But, you know, our courts kind of say, you know, was that person crazy or not crazy? This is one of the interesting things about Catholicism. A person who dies having committed a sin, you know, you can't really atone for it. You can't kind of get out of it. If you die committing sins, you could either go to hell or you could go to purgatory. But did you know that if you committed these sins but didn't know you committed these sins, and somebody prays for you, you could buy God. God accepts prayer as a way of saying, well, to those people who died, who committed sins, who I can't let into heaven, who are in the waiting room, right? To those, if I get enough prayers, I'll let them in. That's the understanding that I got. It's kind of an interesting thing. That's why people are always praying for the dead. They're praying for the dead saying, he didn't know what he was doing, he didn't know what he was doing, he didn't know what he was doing. Please let him in, please let him in, please let him in. And one way of seeing it. Now, we're asking about you and your sinful nature. In your own mind, have you committed sins? When we get back from our break, which we're going to do right now, we're going to go for a break, but you know, if you think about it, is sex sinful? Is sodomy, I mean, which we just heard about.
Or greed.
Greed and sex. Is sex sinful? Is greed sinful? Is love sinful? How could that be? What if you love somebody else? A man told me he was with his best friend the other day, and he found his best friend's wife very, very attractive. And he couldn't take his eyes off her. And he felt so bad for the feeling. He felt like he was betraying his best friend. And he suffered from this one, you know. Is that a sinful thing, to be looking towards someone else? What about having, but beyond sexual feelings, greed, wanting something that doesn't belong to you, that belongs to somebody else? What else is there?
Doing something intentionally hurtful.
Hurting somebody, right? That's another thing, hurting somebody. So these are things that we know in our community, in our world, we can't get away with. But everybody feels, does that mean that getting angry is wrong? Does that sinful getting angry? Well, it's kind of venial. You know, for bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I got angry at my mother. Boom, you know, you get forgiveness for that. Because it is something wrong with it. So we're looking at it, and then we're going to get to you, and we're going to get to you and your sense of it. But before we do, when we get back from our break, I'm going to bring you the 70 sins of Islam, which is fascinating. Because if you don't do these things, I promise you, you're going to be okay. I've got 70 things that if you promise never to do, you're going to be an okay person. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then after the music, we're going to be bringing you 70 Sins of Islam, which is not the name of a song, and how that will help you in your future.
Now the Lord will forgive. forgive you if you're cheating, and the Lord will forgive you if you're lying. Yes, He'll forgive you, and He'll help you live. You sure frowned down soundly on the lies that you and I made, 'cause it's a sin when you love somebody. Damned if you do, twice damned if you don't. It's a sin when you love somebody as much as I'm loving you. Now the Lord has been known for His kindness, always willing to set poor sinners free. He'll forgive, He'll help you to love. I still don't see your angels about to shine down, you and me, baby. 'Cause it's a sin when you love somebody. Damn if you do, twice damn if you don't. It's a sin when you love
Hard to believe. That's Joe Cocker. It's a sin if you love somebody. Hard to believe in the concept that it's a sin if you love somebody, but I'll tell you something, when you fall out of love, you sure feel like you're in hell. You know what I mean? I mean, after love, oof.
But does love feel like heaven?
Does love feel like heaven?
So love, right. Love feels like heaven. And you're in heaven, you go, whoa, this is really wonderful, right? And boy, is there a drop away when it's over. And almost everybody goes through it in their life, that falling out of love into the...
Never going to fall in love again.
Never going to fall in love, heaven and hell. There was Stan the Clam and Sam the Clam. You know, there were these two clams. They were very nice people. But Sam was a very wild guy. He played trumpet and he was a wild guy. And Stan, he played harp. He's a very nice guy. And they both died. Stan goes up to heaven, right? And he plays the harp for God. And he's like that. But he misses Sam, who's down in hell playing trumpet in a nightclub. So he says to God, can I go downstairs and see Stan? And God says, sure, you go visit, but be careful. Make sure you don't leave anything down there. And be sure you come back by midnight, 12 o'clock. Sam goes down, visits Stan. Stan is having a good time in Stan's nightclub. Stan the Clam, of course, is playing his trumpet in a nightclub. You all have this visual image by now. You see this wild party going on. There goes Stan with his harp going to Sam with his harp going down, seeing his friend, and he's having a nice time. They have a wonderful time. Clock starts to ring 12. Sam says, I got to go back up quick because I got to get back into heaven. He goes rushing up, just as the clock strikes 12, and God says, I can't let you back in. St. Peter or God, somebody says. He says, why not? He said, because you left something down there. And he said, oh, no. I left my harp in Sam Clam's disco. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI. I left my harp in Sam Clam's disco. major 70 sins to Islam. Number one, the worst sin, which is very much like Catholicism, associating anything with Allah. You know, like Allah be down to get you in a taxi. No, anything with Allah. In other words, you say this is God's will, this is God's this is God's wish. I think that's what it means. Do you think that's what it means? Associating anything with Allah?
I'm thinking more about associating earthly things with Allah.
Like what?
Like taking the Lord's name in vain, some version of that, that you would minimize Allah as someone who...
Just don't mention God. You know, in Judaism, you should never even say the word God. They say Hashem. And it's like you try not to do it. In Catholicism, we have thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. And they also have other things like that. Thou shalt worship no other, and so on and so forth. So you got to be careful what you do with God, how you represent him. Number two on the list of things that you should not do if you're Islamic, murder. It says don't kill anybody.
That's another universal.
Well, I don't know if it's universal. I do know that it's Islamic and it's real clear. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know in Judaism if it's even stated, thou shalt not kill. I'm not sure about that.
Well, yeah, we didn't see it today.
Another sin is practicing magic. Now, keep in mind, this grew up, Islamism grew up out of many, many centuries. And practicing magic is one of the things that is like a mystery. You don't want to do that if you're going to be a good Islam. And I tell you, my friends, if you don't do any of these things nowadays, you're going to be fine. Not praying is another one of those things that you should not do. You should pray. Not praying in itself passively is one of the Islamic sins. Then there's disrespect to your parents. Showing disrespect to your parents. Now, that's, of course, very self-protective as a sin because parents, if they had to take a vote, what shall we call sins and what shall we not call sins? Well, the kids weren't making the votes. They'd say, well, throw in disrespect of children. No, no, no. We'll do disrespect of parents. And then we'll add to that abandoning relatives. But you see, it's a good thing. It's a good thing because if the community does not abandon its relatives and it does keep some kind of respect for the elders, and they don't murder anybody, you know, it's going to be a nicer world. Now, the two big sins, fornication and adultery. I'm not sure what makes fornication and adultery. I think adultery means somebody is in some way owned by somebody else, whereas fornication is just plain sex. You can't have sex, period. And you can't have sodomy either. Now, sex is defined, sodomy is defined as anything but, what is it?
Vaginal intercourse.
Anything but penile vaginal intercourse is considered sodomy.
Yes.
So you can't have sodomy. It says interest. I think they mean incest.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't have interest, boy, that's really in trouble.
That would be the
That would be a real problem.
Right.
Then they have things, get this, wrongfully consuming the property of an orphan. That must have been some way that happened in Islamic law. I would love somebody to explain that to you. And the big one, number 36, which I think I know you love, Lisa, it just doesn't, we don't know how it got here, not protecting oneself from urine.
Can't be unclean.
It's something about being unclean. Showing off is a major problem. Learning knowledge of the religion for the sake of the world and concealing that knowledge. In other words, not letting people know you're Islamic. Betrayal of a trust. Recounting favors. Taking them back. Carrying tales from one person to another. Cursing. Breaking contracts. believing in fortune tellers, lying, a leader deceiving his people and being unjust to them. These are all the rules of Islam, which you're not allowed to do, things you can't do. Pride and arrogance, bearing false witness, gambling, slandering chaste women. I guess you could slander unchaste women. Stealing from the spoils of war. Stealing. Taking false oaths. Oppression. Illegal gain. Committing suicide is against Islam. Frequently lying. Judging unjustly. Giving and accepting bribes. Being cuckolded, which means having somebody, having your mate have sex with somebody else and you know about it. Marrying a divorced woman in order to make her lawful for the husband. How does that work? Marrying a divorced woman to make her lawful for the husband. Oh, I think that has to do... What does that have to do with Lisa? Do you know anything about it?
I think it probably has to do with sex.
I don't know. I know this.
Maybe also property.
Yeah. Begging is against the law, treating others unjustly, overbearing conduct towards the wife, the servant, the weak, and the animals, offending one's neighbors, offending and abusing Muslims. As an Islamic, you cannot offend and abuse a Muslim. Well, wait a minute. Aren't they, how did they go to war with each other? What's the story? Knowingly ascribing one's paternity to a father other than one's own is a arguing and disputing violently. You're not allowed to do it. Cheating, feeling insecure, offending Allah's righteous plans, not praying in congregation, persistently missing Friday prayers, usurping the rights of the heir through bequests, spying on the for the enemy of the Muslims, whatever that means, cursing or insulting anybody. It was the Bahia I was telling you about. The Bahia is the one where you have the evil one inside you. So these are some of the things that you are told. And you, my friends, as a listener, are you a sinner? I mean, do you have sinful parts of you? If I were to open up the airwaves and take some phone calls, which I would do today, because next week, we, in fact, 212-209-2900, I would love to hear from you, but not from a place where you're going to talk about good or bad or good or evil or stand on a soapbox and preach to me. Just the conflict as you feel it inside of you between what's right and what's not right and how you fight over it all the time. 212-209-2900 is the number. But a question to you, and my question to you at all time, is what's right and what's not right according to your insides? Religion is there to kind of help you. It's a way it guides you along. You can accept it or not accept it. You could accept an afterlife. You could accept God. You could accept morality. But they do set down some very interesting guidelines. Now, the Bahia way, which is very interesting, is that, you know, there's an evil guy inside you ready to come out. And you got to guard yourself against this evil, ready to jump out at any point. So sin is a term generally associated with a theological belief system, and it's the right or wrong. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, this is Dave in Brooklyn. I try to catch your show whenever I can. You were correct when you said the word interest, and then someone changed it to incest. Islamic people are not permitted to charge interest on loans.
Oh, good.
So
thank you.
You were right the first time.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a very curious thing to see it in there. You mean getting interest, you're not allowed to charge.
You're not permitted, yeah, under their Sharia
law. Are you Islamic?
No, I'm Orthodox Jewish.
But it's something you know about, right? Well, tell me.
I know about. In fact, there are banks in the Middle East that structure all kinds of loans. They're very creative. They do them as partnerships almost, so that interest is not charged.
Could you tell me something as a Jew? Is there, what are the sins for which a Jew would be stopped from getting to heaven?
Stopped from getting there. Actually, there are three, I believe. Not being circumcised. In ancient times, not partaking in the sacrifice of the Paschal Lamb, that's the Passover service where a lamb was sacrificed, and the eve of Passover, they ate that. You had to eat that with your family, with your neighbors. And there's also a part of an animal, a part of a certain fat in an animal and a cow that's not permitted. So for those three things, that's the big no-nos.
Other than that, everything else is forgivable. And if you go into the waiting room on your way up there, you know, you got about 10 months before you get into heaven, is my understanding.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I haven't taken the trek, thank God. But I believe you're right, yes.
Yeah, I believe it's something like that. Do you find that your Judaism helps you in any way?
Yes, I do. I find that it causes me to focus correctly. It anchors me. It causes me to see God in everything. I believe in evolution to a certain extent. But I also believe that somebody had to put this all together, so to speak. If you look at the DNA and the whole system in a blade of grass, it's more complicated than building the most exquisite skyscraper. So just looking around as a thinking person, you've got to say, hey, somebody had to put this all together. Somebody had to plan this out. It didn't all come from primordial ooze, and everything came from that as an accident, or as evolutionists say, it must have evolved. So if you see God in everything, I also do not believe in coincidence. Things happen to everybody, and I do believe it's for a reason. So it's a tough one because you're asked to have a belief system where you cannot meet the boss or see him. But I think as a thinking person, you can see that there's really somebody up there.
So it has a great deal of meaning to you. I want to thank you very much. What's your name?
Dave Dworetsky in Brooklyn.
Dave, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. You know, a lot of the very interesting thing about some of the Catholic Church looks at the usage of psychology as a way of avoiding moral responsibility. And it says, you know, the psychologists, which we tend to do, we say it's not your fault, it's society's fault. We say it's not your fault, it's your partner's fault. That what we do is we take blame. Psychologists take a person off the hook, make them not responsible for what they do, say, or hear that might not be right, you know? 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, yeah. I just want to explain about the adultery.
Please do. And what's your name?
Ahmed.
Ahmed, thank you.
Yes. It's you're not supposed to have sex other than having sex with your wife. And if you're not married, you're not supposed to have sex, period.
Ever.
Ever.
Now, does that include masturbation?
That I'm not so sure, but I think that's included as well.
So what do you do, Ahmed, as a kid, when you suddenly feel turned on, and you got this feeling, and you have this erection, and it feels good to touch it? What do you do? Are you told this is sinful?
In Islam, it is sinful, but there are still people still do it, I believe.
So there's a way of doing it. You can still do it, but you don't consider it a very serious sin. But
I'm not sure it's a serious sin. But if you're married and you do adultery, you commit adultery, that's a very sinful thing.
It's a very serious thing.
Yeah, very serious.
What happens to you if you do that? What's the punishment?
I don't know about the punishment, but as you know, punishment is hell.
No, I don't know. In Islam, the punishment is hell?
Yes. I mean, it's one of the punishments. It's a big punishment. It's a big sin. It's not a small sin. But still, God is forgiven. Like you said, if somebody prays for you, if you pray God, maybe you are forgiven. And also... About the unlawful marrying someone. I'm not sure how you said it.
Yes.
If somebody divorce his wife, because you could divorce and then comes back, married, get married again with the same wife, the same woman. If you do it three times, you're not allowed to have her again as a wife, unless she marries someone else. And it should be a lawful marriage, and by chance she divorced that person, then you can have her again.
Well, Ahmed, have you ever known of a case like that? Have you ever known of somebody who got divorced three times?
Well, yes, I know people who got divorced three times with the same woman, but I don't know if they get back together.
Well, why would you get divorced three times from the same woman? I mean, why would, I mean, seriously, I mean, third time, it's kind of interesting that you would be with the same person three times. Do they have only one wife, or do you have many wives?
As you know, I think, as you know, in Islam, you are allowed to marry four wives at the same time.
So you got four wives, so it's maybe one of them that you get rid of, but you could get her back, but you could get rid of her again, and you could get her back. Have you ever had four wives?
Oh, no. I'm lucky I'm having one.
What do you mean, lucky you're having one?
Well, I mean, what I'm saying, I don't believe in having more than one. I mean, it's not that I don't believe in it, but it's, I just like to have just one, not more than one.
It's a choice.
It's a choice.
Now, Ahmed, why would somebody choose to have one when they could have four? And are those police coming for you?
You know, there are some who are, they believe in Islam, and they believe that it's God, it's a God's choice, and it's, they believe in production. They believe that they're here to produce.
Good. Okay, so there, if you have four wives, you can have more children.
Exactly.
And that works better that way. And as far as you're concerned, Ahmed, to you, having a direct relationship with somebody who you care about a great deal and you love and you have this tender contact with, that's all that counts to you. I mean, you have no interest in adultery. You know, nobody could tempt you because you're deeply in
it. There's some temptation, of course, but the fact that you love that person, and also when you believe in your faith, if you have faith, you still can control yourself and say, that's sinful, I cannot do it. First of all, it's because it's a sin. And second of all, it's also because you love your wife, and you cannot do that.
Thank you so much, Ahmed. Thank you for calling in.
Sure.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Next Tuesday, we're going to start a very interesting sequence where you're going to, I mean, do set your dial there. I mean, do get ready to tune in. Lisa and I are going to be presenting some very interesting stuff that we're preparing for you for Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, which is going to be learning a little more about psychology from the inside view of the therapist. I'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We are learning.